If we could stay on topic this entire time, I think we deserve a beer and a brat.
Well, I'm already drinking, so.
I think it's a must.
I do too.
Hey there. Welcome to Beer, Beats, and Business, where the art of conversation is back in business. Now pull up a chair next to Dee Fish. He's a speaker, author, business coach, basically all-around professional talker. And he's chatting with some of today's top entrepreneurs, authors, artists, executives, you name it. They might discuss business technology or what's playing on their headphones. Who knows where the conversation will take them? So grab a glass and join us on Beer, Beats, and Business.
My goal is to help you figure out how you're stuck, to let you know that you've been stuck before, you have that amazing power to get yourself unstuck and come at it on the other end. It's really about discovering your own power and your own success you've already had, and just reminding you that you could do this.
That little slice of wisdom was from my good friend Amy Slutsky. Now, I've actually known Amy for over 20 years, and the only reason I was willing to let her come on the show is if she would promise not to tell embarrassing stories about me from college. Now, the real reason I did invite her on is that she is the founder of Live and Learn Consulting, where she's a nationally board-certified professional counselor who is focused on giving individuals the chance to share their stories, whether that's in a therapeutic setting or an educational setting. And her goal is to really connect people with the best versions of themselves. And the way I was thinking, you know, you could have the bartender be your therapist at the bar, but why not bring in an actual professional? My name is David J.P. Fisher, but nobody calls me that. Everyone just calls me D. Fish. I'm an author, speaker, and business coach. But more importantly, today I'm going to be your host on Beer, Beats, and Business. So let's get to it. Amy, how are you today?
Hey, David. I'm good. How are you?
I am living the dream. David, am I in trouble? You usually call me D.
I know. It's so weird. I just, you know, when we were 18, you were David, and I'm having a really hard time acclimating to the rock star consulting David.
That's all right. I'll forgive you this time.
Thank you.
So here's a question. We could totally go off on random tangents about our past, but we're going to be totally focused and serious today. Well, maybe not that serious. Here's my question for you. What do people get wrong about mental health?
I think it's a twofold misconception. I never like to tell people that they're wrong, especially as a therapist, because that's going to really make people uncomfortable, and there goes the session.
That's because you're nicer than I am.
Oh, so. Thanks, honey.
There you go.
But I think one of the most popular misconceptions is getting mental health counseling means that you have had a lifetime movie of the week traumatic experience that, in comparison to every day, I'm just having a rough time, needs quote-unquote professional help.
Okay.
I also think that although there's been some great awareness going on with mental health, Dr. Phil and Dr. Drew and all the reality shows are help perpetrating that stereotype that mental health is really a traumatic experience, when in reality, it's part of your whole health profile, if you will. So,
okay,
you know, you get a cold because, you know, here in Chicago, it was 60 degrees last week, and now it's beautiful and 82, and you're gonna try to make your way through the cold and have chicken soup and have some vitamin C, and if it lasts a little longer than you're comfortable with, you're just gonna go to like a clinic. Maybe you'll go see your doctor. And mental health needs to be pretty much the same way. There are things that happen in life, and they're gonna make you uncomfortable, and with friends and family, perhaps a good microbrew, you could get through.
Right.
But if it's lingering and it's really starting to interfere with who you are, you're going to need some mental health.
Specifically like some mental health help.
Yeah.
What do you think has caused us to feel that getting help is associated with kind of, you said, a traumatic experience? because I think you're right on the money with this. Where did that come from? Like, why do we have this idea of like, oh, you know, I've just had this really bad cold for 2 weeks, so I'm going to go get some medicine versus, gosh, you know, I had this breakup or, you know, I'm having problems at work or just life is really challenging right now and I'm just not getting out of this funk. Like, why do we see that as bad to go and talk to somebody or get some help?
I think that talk therapy, which is what we're talking about, to be specific, I don't prescribe drugs. I don't really talk about pharmaceuticals a lot.
Okay.
So we're talking about getting mental health counseling. I'm talking talk therapy.
Sure.
And with that being said, unless you're watching somebody on TV in a public forum, in a movie, reading a book, you're not really aware of just how every day the experience is talking to a mental health counselor like myself. So
okay.
Your conversation with me right now could very easily take a very slight switch and we could be having a session. But because it is so private and nobody really knows what it entails, then we all trend to look at drama, the plays, the books, the People magazine covers that talk about somebody with addiction.
I gotcha. So it's in some ways, it's just people don't know what it really is all about. Like it's behind the door with, you know, the therapist's door, they think there's just a couch and somebody talking about how, you know, yeah, they have a drug addiction or their parents abused them or something really, really horrible. When I think for most people, and correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, for most people in most talk therapy situations, it's not really about abnormality. It's really about just trying to figure your way through life.
Yeah, it's most often you're stuck somewhere and you've tried everything you can do to become unstuck. And it gets to the point where you're sitting with me in your home. Because one of the things I do is I, like most people, don't like the idea of the office and the couch and the closed door and the mystery of it all. So what I do is I show up where you live because my goal is to kind of take it all in and to help you figure out how you're stuck. And for me personally, it's to let you know that you've been stuck before. You have that amazing power to get yourself unstuck and come at it on the other end. And by talking to me for a couple of weeks, it's really about discovering your own power and your own success you've already had and just reminding you that you could do this and it's all right. It's just a lull. It's not a stoppage.
Okay. That's awesome. So, and it's interesting you say that because I've heard a number of mental health professionals kind of use the same idea where when it's done right, you're actually not fixing anything. You're helping the other person figure it out on their own.
Exactly.
Right? With some guidance. I mean, and we could talk forever about the differences between coaching, which was what I do, and therapy, which is what you do, and you're much, you know, much better suited for doing that. But it, in some ways, the similarities are that it's all about the other person, right? It's about going, hey, my goal is to help, you know, kind of not maybe guide you, but also just kind of walk beside you and point out some things.
Mm-hmm.
I like what you already said. Like, you've done this before. You're just not figuring out how to do it now.
Right. Right. And often it's one of those stacking effects. Like, yeah, I've done this before, but I'm so tired of having to constantly do it. In which case, that's a little bit where the coaching turns more into counseling.
Sure.
I have no problem saying I'm a life coach. I've got no problem if somebody wants to really feel like they need the entire alphabet soup with all my licensure and education behind there. My goal is to get you back on track where you want to be, not where somebody in a textbook through my master's program told me you should be.
Okay. Right, right. And that's such like a common sense way of approaching it. It's ironic that more people don't approach it that way.
It's more financial than ironic, right? So physicians are just coming around to asking us for our appointments what supplements are you taking? And they're really embracing the whole, it doesn't need to be a pill for everything, except for mental health. And my concern is that the pill is still tantamount in our society, even though maybe now it's a supplement, to the talk therapy that, in my opinion, gives you long-term results. So
okay.
There was just an article released by Time magazine this week that did a longitudinal study talking about how many people are taking antidepressants for things that aren't clinical depression.
Mm-hmm.
And that antidepressants, the medical community, they don't really know how it works for depression.
Interesting. So it just works some of the time when people take this pill, so we're going to dish it out and hope it works.
Well, and there's so much power in your mind that this is what's going to help you, that maybe it just gives you that placebo boost of, no, I can do it. And then you're right there back on track. You can do it.
Right, right. Well, and it's interesting because I also know people who have, whether it's antidepressants or other, pharmaceuticals, have used that for mental health issues. And it's actually been very, very helpful. And they're, they're very comfortable saying, yes, this was a necessary piece of, I think to your language, like to my recovery, right? Because a lot of people I know weren't like, well, I'm going to take this forever. But it helped me get to a point that I needed to be. And it seems to me like it's all about going, hey, there's a lot of different tools in the toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've got to make sure we're using the right one. And again, I'm not an expert in this, but you are. It seems like people have, in the last maybe 20 years, gotten very comfortable, probably too comfortable, going, oh, the tool that we're always going to go to is in this little pill box. Let's just throw it at that.
That pill box is 100% necessary for some people. Because when we're talking about the difference between, oh, I'm so depressed, and I am clinically depressed as outlined by the code textbook that we use called the DSM, there's a big difference. And the difference is your natural biochemistry. There are people that just, through no fault of their own, aren't making enough of those neurochemicals that you need in order to make it through your day. So I love Big Pharma for those drugs. And the more they come out, the more that others are transitioned into making them generics and much more affordable. My concern is that that's not partnered with talk therapy when appropriate.
Okay. So you got to kind of put it all into the mix.
Yeah, just I like the toolbox. Absolutely. It's a big toolbox, and there should be no shame to asking for help for anything. I can't even count, and I'm not wearing any shoes now, so I can count on those 20, how many times you have helped me in my life. So you have to ask for help, and sometimes you have to ask for help with somebody that's got some specialized training.
Well, and even if I didn't have shoes on, you've helped me more than 20 times. So luckily, I haven't mutated yet to be able to count on my fingers and toes past 20. But I totally agree with you. So here, let me ask you this question. So somebody's listening in, and they might have some kind of preconceived notions about therapy or about getting help. There's a lot of people, especially in my field, entrepreneurs and solopreneurs, people that are out there having to do things on their own. There's a little bit of that Superman, Superwoman mentality. What do you think is a good way for somebody to be able to kind of check in with themselves and become okay with getting help? That was kind of a weird question, but did you follow me on that one?
I think what you're asking me is, how do you know when you need help versus you're just having a difficult day?
Yes. And then the second part of that is, what would be a good way for somebody who's feeling that stuckness to get okay with reaching out, to get okay with making a phone call? How do you develop the self-awareness, and then how do you get past this block of not wanting to get help because you've never done it before?
So a lot of times you will recognize from the help of others. So like, I know my husband, I know you as my friend, I know our group of friends, I know people that I interact with at all kinds of levels they will know, you know, hey, you really haven't been you. You might not be down. Maybe you're a little angry or you're a little irritated or you are a little too happy where it seems like you're phony because you're trying to covering up for something.
Trying a little too hard.
A little too hard to like, no, it'll be great. And all you say are platitudes and affirmations. So a lot of the times it's up to the people around you to be courageous enough to say, you're not acting like the you I know. What's going on?
Okay.
And then you have to be brave enough to look at yourself in the mirror and say, you know what? Enough. Like, this is not the story of my life. This is not the chapter of my biography that I actually want to be living right now.
Okay.
And I need help. I just need help because I no longer recognize myself.
Gotcha. So if somebody, they're getting this feedback from their surroundings, from their peers, something's a little off, they finally, and I think you're right on where you eventually just go, wait, just something's, okay, enough, right?
Right.
It doesn't have to be this huge hitting rock bottom like a drug addict or something like that, but because these aren't necessarily as dire circumstances, but you're right. It's like, hey, I don't want to keep living my life like this.
Yeah.
What would be a good first step for somebody? Who finally, like, the light bulb goes off, and I think it's important that there's very easy ways, because I think even when people are aware, sometimes if it's hard to take the next step, they don't.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you had a friend, let's say, who came to you, didn't know you're a therapist, and didn't want to come to you for therapy, it was like, hey, what's the next step? What should I do? What is it, do you think? What's an easy way for people to access this?
You know, it's funny, because one of the things I do most often these days is have a workshop based on this stuff about, you know, I don't have time for a therapist. I don't want to invest in this. Is there something I can do every day to kind of right this ship and get it back? And there are tons of things you can do. And one of those things is just to connect. So you say to those people that have said to you, you know, you're not right. What's going on? Instead of being the Superman you referred to earlier or the Superwoman, you actually say, you know what? I'm in this rut and I've had these three things go wrong this week and I am having a really hard time picking myself up because you've got those everyday connections. So you need to reach out to the people that you already have in your network, in your friendship circles.
Okay.
And you also need to do a little bit of what therapists call positive asset search.
I like it. Tell me more.
So all these things are going wrong, let's say, at work. Or the one I'm more familiar with is at home. So I've got clients now that's a family. And at work, the mother and the father are successful. They are really feeling fulfilled, but things at home with the kids are wonky and it really turns their entire day into a nightmare. And when you're rushing off to work and trying to spend more time at work than at home, that's one of those things where there's no traumatic event, but this is not the way we want to live out our days.
Sure.
So one of the things that you need to do is to go into your photo album, virtual or physical, and look at times where things are not that bad. You can do your own kind of skill assessment. You know what? Like, this was a lot of fun. We went on a family picnic. Or when's the last time we had family game night? Or
right.
I'm going to actually sit down and watch the Gilmore Girls on Netflix with my daughter.
Why are you punishing her? I'm kidding. I actually used to watch Gilmore Girls. They talk so fast. They talk so fast.
So I've never seen the Gilmore Girls. I have no idea why that erupted from my head. but really, that's what it is.
Okay.
You have immense skills to help yourself. And often it's just slowing down and finding the things that made you happy when it was easier to be happy.
I like that. So let me dive into this a little deeper because I think this is really powerful. What are some other ways, like that people can kind of engage with themselves or even acknowledge this need for mental health. I mean, I think one of the biggest challenges we have is that we don't pay attention to the fact that we have to take care of our mental and emotional and spiritual self, right?
Mm-hmm.
The multivitamin industry is a billion-dollar industry because we're like, we have to do things to keep our health, you know, physical health up, but we don't think about doing the same thing, you know, for all the non-visible parts of our lives. What are people who are good at kind of taking care of themselves? What do they do? What are some of the kind of things you've seen that connect these people?
I feel like their secret to successful mental health, and an easy one we can all emulate, is to treat yourself as well as you treat others.
Mm.
So I know that I like to spoil my husband on occasion. And, for example, I'm right now staring at an entire tray full of chocolate banana muffins with white chocolate chips in them.
Okay, so why would you say that? Now I'm super hungry and jealous. This is horrible. Okay, anyways, go ahead.
I don't think either my husband or my son is going to save you one.
I don't think so either.
But, so I'm looking at that, and it's a perfect example, right? Because I did that because giving them joy in those little cupcake tins makes me really happy, but I haven't had one of those myself yet, and I'm not, you know me, I'm not like, oh, I'm on a diet or I can't afford the calories. I'm all about hedonism. So that's not it. And when my husband called me out on it last night, and I swear this is a true story, I said, well, because if I eat one, that's one less for you or Jacob, who's my four-year-old son. That mentality is completely screwed up.
Okay.
So if you just treat yourself as well as you treat others, you say kind things about yourself, you accept the compliments that come your way, you treat yourself to something where you're normally stockpiling the cash to buy somebody else an I thought of you today present, then you are well on your way to just having a really strong mental health cachet for when life is a little bit unmanageable.
I like it. I think something you said, which is very easy for everybody to do, is just the idea of how you talk to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've even found that in my work, working with clients where, like, they'll talk about themselves, or maybe they'll be sharing a scenario, something that happened maybe with one of their employees, and they'll talk about how they handled it, and they're like, oh man, I was so stupid. I just totally, you know, messed it up and blah, blah, blah. And like, they're really harsh on themselves. And you're kind of like, would you talk to one of your peers that way, an employee, a family member that way? And of course they're like, of course, no way.
Never.
I'm like, well then why the hell would you do it to yourself?
Exactly.
And so this idea of, I love the example you're giving of the muffins, but I think you can just take it a step easier and just go be aware of how you talk to yourself. And it's interesting that you are connecting that with not a, you know, airy fairy, oh, you should just be Pollyanna and say nice things to yourself. It's like, no, you'll be in better shape, which allows you to handle the challenges of life even better.
Absolutely.
I want to switch directions a little bit, and I'm going to ask you about your favorite soundtrack.
Nice.
But before we do that, you are listening in to Beer, Beats, and Business. I am your host, D. Fish. If you want to reach out to me, please do so. Shoot me a tweet at DFishRockstar. If you have an idea about mental health, if you just have a question, you have a great topic we should cover, or you just want to say, hey, please do shoot me that tweet at DFishRockstar. And also, if you get a chance, make sure you're hitting the subscribe button and giving us a 5-star rating if you're listening to this on iTunes. And today I'm talking with my good friend, Amy Slutsky. Amy is the founder of Live and Learn Consulting, and she is a nationally board-certified professional counselor, and she has, and she's a saint for this, over 15 years of classroom experience working with at-risk populations. Her mission now is to give individuals the chance to share their stories in a therapeutic or educational setting so they can connect with the best version of themselves. That made me happy just saying it. Amy, what is the best way for people to connect with you and find out more about Live and Learn?
The quickest way is our website, which is liveandlearnconsulting.com, and that's the letter N in between, kind of like Toys R Us. On there, you'll find a link to my biography, which will give you a little bit of how this teacher became a therapist and then went back to be a teacher, and some of the work I do with foster care and kids. But I think the most accessible way is probably Facebook, like everybody else. Live and Learn Consulting is on Facebook. You can send me a message through there. There's also blog posts that you can find both on the website and on Facebook, which are written every day, released on Wednesday, so you can get through hump day, because that middle of the week is hard for all of us. And you'll find there all the tips that you need, some of which we've talked about today, just for everyday mental health.
I love it. And we'll make sure to have all of those links in the on the website in the show notes.
Thank you.
So, favorite soundtrack. Let's talk music.
Okay.
I was kind of surprised. What is it?
I know. So I have to have noise in order to make me concentrate. And my go-to soundtrack is the Lord of the Rings soundtrack.
The Lord of the Rings. So you want the sounds of New Zealand filling your home when you're working.
I want the vision in my head of Eowyn trying to take Frodo fast across to escape the ring race. Like, that's the stuff that I'm a visual thinker, and it's always inspired by music. So when I think of that soundtrack and I hear that music that went with that scene, I feel exhilarated, and I know I can, like, race across and beat these timelines that I'm trying to accomplish. All of that, I'm like, oh, yeah, I got this. I got this. I can do that. And then, of course, you know, should I happen to be in some saloon with a pint singing with a couple of halflings, and I'm good. Really?
By the way, I forgot to do the warning for the turn into the nerd world for all of our listeners. Although it's really weird, like 20 years ago when we first met, like Lord of the Rings was not cool. Like I was one of the nerds for reading it. Now it's like everybody's into that. You know, come on, like what do us true nerds have to hold on to? You know, I can at least say I used to play Dungeons and Dragons. You know,
that's awesome.
And yes, I'm admitting that out loud, but you know it's okay. You know, I fully support people role playing, having a good time. And you know what? I found a wonderful woman to marry me and have a normal life.
Well, and my husband and I met because the group of friends that we were hanging out with all had an Ethernet cable landline, and everybody walked their desktop, not laptop computers, up, and we all played the original Warcraft. So,
oh boy,
I am flying my geek flag high with Woo-hoo! Zero shame.
I love it. I love it. But so going back to the soundtrack, it's interesting. So like you're actually, for you, listening to the music is very much about specific scenes in the movie as well. Yeah. Like it's really kind of connecting it to you, for you.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt that I'm about Frodo height. So
I think Frodo might be about an inch or two taller.
Well, you've met Frodo, so that's not fair.
That's true. And so I think he's a little taller. That was all CGI.
So, yeah, like, I like any kind of inspiration where somebody that's the underdog and is never going to accomplish this great task wins without completely but nearly losing their soul. I'm in.
Okay. All right. And I wanted to actually ask you about something else. We could definitely chat, you know, beer and wine, but that's boring. I mean, not boring, but, you know, we could get that. I can do that with other guests. I want to ask you about young adult fiction.
Oh, yeah.
Because you're the one I know who likes to read the young adult fiction. What are your favorite ones right now?
I just finished reading, I would say my seventh or eighth Ellen Hopkins book. Her books are all written in poetry, which sounds very I went to Northwestern, but is not. It just so happens that's how she constructs the images, and she takes into those images things that nobody wants to talk about. So I just finished a book called Traffic, which was a sequel to a book called Tricks, and it's all about how teenagers, and these characters are 14 and 15, get into sex trafficking, how they get there, what their stories are, how do they get out? Some of them don't make it out. They're real life topics that real life
people are
dealing
with.
They're realistic fiction.
Interesting.
Yeah, she's got all kinds of different topics, and she's not afraid to say that this is what kids are going through. And I love reading those books because I deal so much with at-risk youth whose first thing they say to you is, you don't know me, you don't know my story.
Right.
Okay, that's true. There's one I work a lot with foster care kids, and a friend of mine went to go see a girl who's now hospitalized and is very much into comics. And there's a book whose title I'm going to mess up, but somewhere in the title it says something about Princess X.
Okay.
And it's a young adult fiction, and it's about just a super strong female protagonist who happens to be a teenager, and half of the book is written like a graphic novel, and half of it is written like regular fiction. And this girl who is really going through a hard time right now, and of course did not do school, doesn't like school, never read a book she was required, went through the book in 3 days.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So in some ways, it's a really good way of giving people access. I like what you're saying about young adult fiction being a way for young adults to access stories that can help them with what they're dealing with right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, because it's always interesting, I always get weirded out a little bit when so many adults like young adult fiction. Like, I'm not sure if that's necessarily a good or bad thing. Because, like, sometimes I'm like, hey, people who are reading, that's great. Like, and I said, I've read through the Artemis Fowl series, which are, you know.
Awesome.
Which are, they're fun, and they're light. And I actually, it's my version of watching bad television, right?
Yeah.
But I just wonder, like, is it good if people just stay there? Like, I'd be concerned if adults, you know, mature adults were just reading that and not reading the things that are challenging them at that level, right? Does that make sense?
It does, but I would disagree because it depends on why you're reading it.
Okay.
So if you're reading because you've just completed the last installment of Networking in the 21st Century by Dee Fish, and your whole business life has changed, but you just need a break, then go ahead and read something with Fabio on the cover.
Right, right.
Go ahead. For me, I really enjoy the way young adult always harkens back to the human condition. And I'm always concerned with how teenagers are discounted. And it's nice that there's a whole genre committed to them having a voice.
And gotcha.
As an adult, I'm relatively healthy, but it's still relatively so. But it's still, it's really, really nice that, you know, I can have a visit from my mom that might trigger some kind of fight I had with her when I was 14. And it's nice to have a different perspective on that. So,
sure. Okay.
My only caveat with young adult fiction is you cannot recommend it to a young adult whose parent is not willing to read it first. Because you can't usurp a parent's right to say, my child is not ready for that, or I don't want these life lessons coming from that book, or
right.
They don't correspond with my morals. So.
Well, yeah, and young adult fiction is definitely these days, from what I've seen, there's actually a couple of books, and they're escaping me right now, but I remember I was reading one, and then only afterwards I found out it was quote-unquote young adult fiction, and I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
okay. You know, and of course it was like some dystopian, you know, novel of, you know, it was just horrible, and I'm like, okay, there's definitely some life lessons there.
Oh, but, yeah.
I like that. You got to be like, okay, let's let the parent decide, and then have them read it.
Yeah, that, you know, it gets real. And sometimes, you know, part of me wants to get real and have those tough conversations. And then the other part of me wants to preserve childhood for as long as possible.
Right. Their innocence will be corrupted eventually.
Exactly.
Well, and what a happy place to bring our conversation to an end. That innocence will always go away eventually.
Well, if we want to talk corruption, we could talk about my love of adult beverages.
Oh, jeez. What's your favorite right now?
It's summer, so I'm on Pinot Grigio.
Oh, that's right. I do appreciate you like a good craft beer, but you are one of my classy wine friends.
Yes. So. If by classy, you want to negate the fact that another one of our dear friends and I may or may have not had our mouths underneath the spout of Franzia not so long ago.
And for those of you who are too classy, you know what Franzia is. It's wine in a box, ladies and gentlemen. Wine in a box. Oh, boy. Amy, I can see the warning signs right now that you're going to start sharing stories that I don't need on the interwebs. So,
I'm saving those for your wedding.
Oh, great, great. Well, hey, I've loved having you on today. I'm so glad we got a chance to do this. The question I always ask everybody, if you could give someone a tip to make today a little better, what would it be?
Smile at a stranger.
Simple, sweet, to the point. Perfect. Amy, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks, T. I love you, honey.
Bye.
Bye, honey.
As always, thanks for stopping by. You can find show notes and links to the topics in this episode at beerbeatsandbusiness.com. You can also share this episode through social media and leave reviews through iTunes, Stitcher, or any of your favorite podcasting services. This episode, like all others, is brought to you by our regulars over at Patreon. If you'd like to be one of the people with your own spot at the bar, we'd love to have you. Visit patreon.com/B3 and become a regular today. Want to get in on the conversation? Easy. Send DFish a message on Twitter at DFishRockstar. And we'll save a spot for you at the bar for the next Beer, Beats, and Business.
I'm DFish. Thanks for joining us today.
If I can crank up the Seattle sound that I was playing back then I feel strong like I was back then. Oh, I got this. I'm so on top of my game.
I'm sorry. I've just got this image in my head. 18-year-old Amy cruising down the road, blasting Even Flow.
Right.
Oh, that's fantastic. That image is going to help me with my mental health the rest of the day. That's for sure.
I am the gift that keeps giving, my love.